Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
My name is Craig Ferguson. The name of this podcast is Joy. I talk to interesting people about what brings them happiness. Here's my favorite car collector. I think he had a late night show at some point. I can't remember. Here he is, Jay Leno. All right, we're up. So here's the thing.
Oh, so we're no video, eh?
No, no.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing why no video, because this is the reason why I don't do it. Because people like you, some performers, want so much makeup and hair done.
Oh, yeah. Not me.
No, not you. So I tell you what I'm doing right here, right now, as I'm enjoying a cup of coffee. Now, I know that you don't drink coffee.
No, no drink coffee. And my first cup of coffee I ever had was Seinfeld on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. It was awful.
You didn't like it?
I don't like hot liquids.
Now, see, what about soup? Does soup come into it?
Soup is just a way to screw you out of a meal.
Fuck you.
Here you go.
Come on, here you go. Soup.
Oh, here's a bowl. It's wet. Thanks.
All right. So now,
do you have anything other than a wet bowl? You have something I can chew? Thank you.
Well, hold on a second.
Good.
Is it because it's a hot liquid or because it's just a liquid?
It's not a meal. It's a, what is
this? Does it have to be a meal?
It's a drink.
But you won't have soup because it's a drink.
Plus I don't like hot liquids.
Yeah. If you don't like, what about gazpacho or maybe a cold borscht?
No, horrible.
So really it's about liquid then. Do you ever drink any liquids at all?
Yeah, I drink a lot of water, a lot of fruit juice, a lot of orange juice.
You drink beer?
No, never had a beer in my life.
You never had a beer?
Never had a beer.
You never drink any of the hooch at all?
No. I have nothing against it. I have no interest in it. I was always a designated driver. I was always a car guy. So to me,
I'll drive
you jerks home, and that's fine.
All right. So no, you. So very few liquids.
No just liquids, lad. And no soup.
Well, I'm worried that, look, none of us are getting younger, Jay, right?
Right.
So at a certain point in life, soup is kind of gets attractive to the older gent. That's all I'm saying.
I'm 73 and I haven't been there yet. So
well,
I'm
just saying that, your soup years may be coming up.
Yeah,
right? Get used to it.
Let's hope not. Yeah.
No, all right. So listen, your mother was Scottish.
Aye.
And my mother was Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife has a theory about stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
That their mothers have to be Scottish. Or they have to be cold with bad boundaries. That's what Megan says.
No, my mom was not cold. My parents were very good that way.
Did she have good boundaries?
I don't know what you mean by boundaries.
Well, not do I, but, a lot of people talk about them.
Well, how long are you in Hollywood? An hour now, and you've got boundaries.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
I never heard any of, it's so funny. Where I grew up, I was the laziest person anybody knew. I come here, Jay's the hardest working guy. No, it's just where you grow up. It's that, You know, you grew up in New England with Silas Marner and Ethan Frome and all these depressing books about first you work hard, then you die, then you get rheumatoid arthritis. And
you die after you get rheumatoid arthritis, and then you die.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just, life is awful, you know. So then you come to Hollywood and all the lights are bright and it's sunny outside. And yeah.
What age were you when you came here?
I started coming here, I guess, when I was 19, 20. Something like that. Not in 1920.
When you were 19 and 20. But here's the thing. You came out here to do comedy because you're Boston, right?
Right.
So did you ever do stand-up in Boston before you came out here?
Oh, yeah. You know, that was the great thing. Because growing up in Boston, I never met another stand-up comedian. Occasionally, comedians would come to like the Chateau Deville in Framingham.
Sounds fancy.
Well, yeah, it's one of those places like near a mall. And it's got like a fountain in front.
That is fancy.
I worked there with Tom Jones. I worked there with Perry Como. I like Dionne Warwick. All those acts from that era.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And that was an opening act. That was a little later.
You wanted to be a stand-up that young at 19 and 20 years old?
Oh, yeah.
You got to be fucked up in some way then, because nobody wants to be a stand-up.
Why wouldn't you want to be a stand-up?
Well, back in the day, nobody wanted. I mean, nowadays, people want to do it. Well, they have courses for it.
When I would watch TV,
yeah,
all comedians were middle-aged Jewish men like Rodney, like Henny Youngman,
right?
All those guys, all the Catskill comics. And then all of a sudden, Robert Klein came along, who was a huge influence on me. Robert was about 10 years older than me.
Right.
And he was a middle-class kid. Parents weren't wealthy, but he didn't grow up during the Depression. Just talking about the same kind of things I talked about. And then Carlin, at that point, had just about 1970, early 71, released his Class Clown album.
Right.
And I used to do George's routines in my head. And I'd do them silently to myself, and then I'd add my own jokes at the end.
Right.
So when I would go to audition at places, I would stand backstage, I would get into it by doing George's thing. And then when I walked out, I'd say, you know, when I was in school, you know, I didn't do any George's material, but I just to get a rhythm to it, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Were you friendly with George?
Yes, I knew George from the very beginning. He was always very nice to me, so was Klein. You know, all comics are pretty nice. Steve Martin helped me get to Tonight Show. Steve Martin told Johnny about me. I told Johnny about Ellen DeGeneres. I find comedians help other comedians. I don't find it to be this. I mean, there are obviously some cutthroat people around, and that's not unusual. But it's not the norm. You know, as a comic, you can't do every job.
No.
So if I couldn't get something, I go, oh, you should. There's a gig I do in Rhode Island. At the Audrain Museum. It's kind of like Pebble Beach East. It's a car show. And I've hosted it for the last 4 or 5 years, but I'm out of material at this point, you know. I said, oh, let me bring Billy Gardell in. So I brought, you know, Billy Gardell.
Of course I know Billy very well. He's a great guy, yeah.
Wonderful comic.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did a great job. He killed it. I felt good that I helped him. He felt good. They got to do a corporate date that paid a lot of money. And it was fun. So wait,
how long? You and I have been friends for a while. You didn't think of putting me up for the fucking corporate?
No, I never thought of that.
Why the fuck?
Yeah. Actually, you want to do it next year?
Yeah, I'll do it next year.
I'll get it for you.
Okay. Because let me just say, so on the East Coast, I like the idea.
And
of that.
You like cars. And you like cars.
I do like cars.
You got to work reasonably clean. That's Rick super
no,
clean.
No, I can. I did gigs with you. I know.
Yeah, great. Yeah, let's do it. I'll do it.
Yeah, I don't mind working clean. The older I get, in fact, the easier it gets to work clean. I've noticed that.
Well, you know, I find when you're 25 and you say the word pussy, girls go, oh, he said, oh, my God. When you're 65, oh, that old guy said, oh.
And you know what? They got a point.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's true. You know, it's fun to grow into your act.
Yeah.
Because my point of view is always from an adult observing things, how stupid this is or whatever it is. You know, and as a young person, it didn't work quite as well as it does now. Now you can be a bit curmudgeonly.
I was struck by your stand-up act when we were working in the Midwest this summer. Like, you throw down, man. It's like a full solid hour, and the material is fresh. And
well, you try to have a joke every 6 to 9 seconds. That's I think.
Really? Because I don't think of it like that.
Everybody's different. It's just different. To me, it's like a music show. You open with your hits, boom, boom, boom. Joke, 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 joke. And then in the middle, you do the comedic version of a ballad. You tell a story. Oh, you know, my wife and I, we go to this place. And there are little humorous jokes along the way, as opposed to,
That's very interesting to me because I do think of it in kind of musical terms as well. It's kind of a musical performance. Are you a musician? Do you play anything?
I played trumpet, but then I realized I couldn't talk and play trumpet at the same time.
That's a terrible instrument for you to play. You should play a guitar.
I was in fourth grade at the time.
Jay, I'm going to tell you something right now. You know, I adore you, but because you played trumpet in fourth grade doesn't mean you played a fucking trumpet.
Right, exactly. That's why I quickly got rid of it.
But you do... I think a lot of the stand-ups that I like are also... They think in musical terms of what they do.
You know, the most musical comic I can think of is Franklin Ajayi. You know Franklin?
I don't know.
African-American comic. Very big in America. He had an album out 30, 40 years ago. He moved to Australia.
Right.
He's a jazz comedian. He plays jazz and he does comedy. He has one of my favorite bits. He talks about the guy. Oh, there was an Olympic guy from some country. And he ran in the marathon, and he came last. He was dead last. And he just, as he's running, he's going, I've been training. I've been working out. I could have sat on the couch and watched TV. I'd still be last. I mean, it's just, there's a lot more to it than
sure.
that. He does a lot better. But it's just very funny, and he just thinks in jazz terms. You know, I was fortunate. I got to work with all the great jazz musicians. Miles Davis, Stan Getz, Mose Allison, Ahmad Jamal, Rahsaan Roland Kirk, all these guys. And with jazz, there was a place called Lenny's on the Turnpike in Boston.
Okay.
And that was a jazz club.
Right.
And real hardcore, Buddy Rich, real hardcore
That's
jazz.
That's the real deal.
You went to see that. And the first time, because usually I used to play strip joints. Everybody, you suck, you suck, man, God! People just scream. So you really didn't know if you're any good or not.
Right.
But with the jazz on, it's been a walked on stage, silence.
Did they nod and snap their fingers when you...
No, not quite that much. But they would listen, you know, like Miles's audience, any of those audiences. I went, oh, this is really... You know, Rahsaan Roland Kirk, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He might be before your time.
It's possible.
Rahsaan Roland Kirk, African-American guy, blind.
Right.
But famous because he could hold a note indefinitely, and he could play two instruments at the same time. He could play the sax and the clarinet at the same time. And
that's crazy. How is that even possible?
Because he could breathe through his nose.
Okay.
But he was blind. So, and we played primarily African-American audiences, a place like the Sugar Shack in Boston. And he would go on stage and he'd go, I'm going to bring a young brother. A brother's going to tell it like it is. You know, he'd give the whole thing like I was black. You know?
Yeah.
Please welcome Jay Leno. You know, and I come out, I go, what? I go, shh, don't.
He doesn't know.
And he thought that was the funniest thing.
Right.
He loved doing that routine every night with people. Bring on a young brother, tell it like it is. Yeah, woo! You know, a black audience. They get all worked up, you know, and then I walk out. I go, what's this? You know, don't say it.
Here's the thing, because you talk about that right now. Like, you even telling that story to me right now. Like, people are going to get bent out of shape. Because of, you know, you mentioned race of any kind and this, you know, different races of any kind, and people are already on the balls of their feet looking for a fight, which I'm getting a little tired of it. I think everyone else is too.
I had the best one happen a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
My wife, Mavis, and I were in a little Chinese restaurant in Westwood. It's got like 14 tables, maybe, okay. If that many. And the mother runs the cashier and takes the orders, and the dad's the cook, and it looks like the kids or cousins. It looks like a family. So we got our food, we're sitting there, and you're kind of, it's right next to UCLA. In fact, it is UCLA.
Right.
And a lot of students around the table. I just said to my wife, God, this woman's really working her ass off. And a girl at the next table, or young woman at the next table goes, she's a server. And I said to her, I'm not mad here, but I do think before I speak. I said to myself, is she a waitress? No. She's a stewardess? No. She's a woman first. Let me say this woman is working her ass off. Now, if I had said the server is working her ass, you probably would have said, oh, she's a woman.
Right.
Should
have probably just said, hey, toots, you're doing a great job. Then that way,
But to me, it's like, because I don't really want to fight. I mean, I get annoyed because I think, oh, do you really think I'm being sexist by saying that? I would say this man. I didn't say girl. I didn't say chick. I didn't say waitress. I said, this woman. I mean, what is wrong with it? And she had to admit, well, no, you're right. If I had said server, isn't that demeaning? Isn't that mean that's all she is? Isn't she a woman
you're
first?
Defining someone by their job.
Yeah. And I said so. But she was so anxious to jump on this.
Well, I think it's a little kind of fashion that the young folks went through for a while that they wanted
it's
to
fine.
Be. You know what? When I was their age, I was a punk rocker. I was a pain in the ass too.
Oh yeah, I know. When you think about how stupid our generation was the word burning down the Bank of America building and
oh my god, yeah.
You remember the SDS to make up for racial injustice? They should kill every third white baby born. I remember someone.
Oh my god!
I remember
really?
Some SDS guy saying that early on.
Okay,
you know, just crazy talk. Just crazy talk. So, to me, a lot of this, like, I never use the word bitch on stage. I know women don't like the word, so I don't use it.
Right.
And to me, you know, it's funny because I do a joke where I see the women where I say, you know, Northwestern University did a study about the differences between men's brains and women's brains. That's amazing. Listen to this. And you see the women go, you know, they're kind of like, okay, it seems women's brains are located in their head. Who saw that coming? And then they laugh more than it is funny because right. It's not an insult. It's not the usual.
Well, I never understood anyone. Look, to me, an audience doesn't have a race or a gender or anything like that. It's an audience is an audience. And you
but an audience does have, the best audiences is a fully male, female, black, white, Asian, integrated audience where they all...
Totally.
For example, you know, if you have done a corporate event where it's all men...
Yes, I have.
Unless it's all worst. Football jokes or gun jokes or something.
No, it's the worst.
It's terrible.
I did a corporate event once up in Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
And I used to do this bit about Tom Cruise. This is a long time ago because I actually am a big fan of Tom Cruise, but it wasn't the most flattering piece.
Really?
Yeah. It was a piece of stand-up.
Right.
And it was just after he jumped on Oprah's couch and I was dicking around with that. And I was doing this piece and this piece, it was a good bit and every night it killed. All right. I thought, well, I'll do it at this corporate. It was a clean bit. It was nothing like bad in it. And at this corporate event, I did this Tom Cruise thing, died on his ass, like really badly died. Nothing. Chirp. Nothing. Crickets. And I come off and went, wow, that was a rough crowd. And they went, somebody should probably tell you it's Tom Cruise's law firm.
Oh, sorry.
It was his lawyer.
Oh, that's so funny.
Oh, my God. It was funny. Do you ever, because you do a lot of the corporate gigs.
Yeah.
And you work clean. I've seen you. You don't work squeaky clean.
No, it's PG-13.
Right. So you work clean. You drop the F-bomb and you don't do that kind of thing. But it's kind of... It's grown up, right? It's an adult show, but it's not an adult Triple X show.
Right. It's not Balloon Animals.
Right. No, it's definitely not that. Do you ever run into it with... Because I've had people say to me at corporate gigs, hey, you got to be really careful here. Do they ever say that to you now or everybody trusts
you?
Well,
I always ask, I go, is this like a born again thing? Is the chairman the born again guy or something?
Would you be able to cope with that if he was?
Yeah, I can work. You know, I booked myself into Oral Roberts University once just to see if I could play it. And they said, look, we don't like sex jokes. We don't like drug jokes. Politics, right. Everything else is fine. And they were fine. They just didn't want any dick jokes. Right?
Right.
All right, fine, that's okay.
So that's probably not one I should be doing.
No.
Actually, I don't do a ton of those jokes.
No.
Yeah.
No, but what I mean, and to me, I see a guy is paying me to do a job. I don't quite get guys to go, so I told him to go shove it, and I did what I...
Yeah, I don't get... I've got to agree with you. I don't understand that. What are you? Then don't take the gig.
Like, to me, I know the... You know, to me, an audience is like an orchestra. You want to get a nice, rolling laugh going. I remember I had a joke. I'm sorry I don't remember the joke, but it was when Hillary Clinton was running for president, and also so was Reggie Jackson and a bunch of other people. And I had a joke about each candidate. And the Reggie Jackson joke was a political joke. It wasn't about him being black. It was just, okay, that got a laugh. When they got to the Hillary joke, I remember one of those go, and I just hated the guttural laugh I got on it because I realized, they think I'm making fun of her because she's a woman candidate as opposed to just a candidate. So I just dropped the joke. I took it out and it kept it. And the audience is much better because it just kept a nice even, you know, you got a nice rolling boil going with the crowd.
Yeah.
And then you do something that's overly sexist or overly whatever.
No, I know what you mean. I felt it as well. There are gags that the joke's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, LaSalle used to always say that to me. Peter LaSalle, he was my boss in late night. Right, and I know you know Peter because he did the Tonight Show for so long. And whenever I did a joke that I, you know, that was like near the knuckle.
Right.
And he would say, is it worth it? Is it really worth it, that joke? Is it that good? Because he would say, you know, jokes like a house or a car. There's always another one. You can do another joke.
Right, right.
And when I first started, I was like, no, it is worth it.
Right, right.
But very quickly, I was like, you're right. Fuck it. We'll be here tomorrow night. It's we'll
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To me, you just sort of learn to read your audience.
You know how you can make your summer vacation better? Is with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear. It's like being at home, but also going away. It's great. And now you can get 35% off. You can get the unmatched softness. It's really as buttery smoothness of Cozy Earth's bedding. It's better than the finest hotels, and you get a really good night's sleep on your travels. And that's important. It's travel-friendly. It's hassle-free. Cozy Earth's bedding comes in adorable totes, making it the perfect companion for your adventures near and far. You can stay cool and comfy during long flights, and you know what that's like, with the Cozy Earth temperature-regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew. Makes you look cool when you're traveling. I like it. Well, as cool as I can look when I'm traveling. So discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code JOY at checkout, and you'll get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after the checkout. Promo code JOY. J-O-Y. JOY. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, everybody has stuff that stresses them out and annoys them, and I'm no different from anybody else. For example, I get very irritated that people that wear shoes that look like feet. That's not a big deal, but it's a big deal to me. Obviously, there are much more important things to get worried about. Get them off your chest. When you keep them bottled up, it starts to affect you negatively. Now, therapy is a safe place to do that. That's what I did. And you figure out what's going on with you, work it through, and then let it go. Let it go, you see, that's what I think. I've done a lot of therapy, and I have to say I'm a very satisfied customer. If you think I'm kind of tense now, you should have seen me before I started. I really do recommend it. If you can do it, you should do it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, I'd suggest giving BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, it's designed to be convenient, it's flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with, you know, a licensed therapist, a proper one, and then you can switch your therapist at any time for no additional charge. I just think it's a good idea. Give it a shot. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/joypod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/joypod.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's talk a little bit about late night, though. So I bring that up because of Peter. When you took over on The Tonight Show, so when was that? Early 90s? 91?
I started guest hosting in 86, 87.
Right. How long would a guest host gig be? Would it be like a week? Would it be like a night?
No. Well, you get one night.
Right. Usually. And Johnny used to do that a lot towards the end of his run, right? He would bring people in and...
Yeah, and there were like six or seven guys that were being considered to
did
be...
Did you ever have guest hosts when you were doing it?
No.
Neither did I, not once.
I did it once because Katie Couric wanted to switch seats. All right. NBC thought it'd be a fun thing to... So we did it one day.
I did the same thing with Drew Carey.
Right. I didn't quite get that. But...
No, I didn't get it.
No, to me... When you have guest hosts, it just means more work for the for the staff.
Right.
Because then they have to put the monologue together instead of you. They have to figure out, can this guy talk to a guest and go over every single note? And
it's a job that's very hard to do for one night. It's a little easier to do it for a couple of years than one night. I get that.
Yeah.
Is that something... Because it's funny, you grew up in an era, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. You grew up in the era when Johnny was the gold standard and he was the king.
Yeah.
So did you have aspirations to be the Tonight Show host, or was it just like, because you were a comic, you kind of drifted into that direction?
You kind of went that way.
Yeah.
It was the only job in show business that I liked.
Right.
Because I like to be around show business as opposed to in it. You know,
yeah, I think I saw a movie with you in it once, like years ago.
Oh, there have been some terrible movies.
Was it a jungle movie? Did I see you in a jungle?
No, that was Bill Maher in the jungle movie.
Oh, that's right. It's Bill in the jungle movie.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the movie was. I've done some real clunkers as well.
I mean, I just like you because, like I say, I don't want to be Charlie Sheen, but I enjoy being around Charlie Sheen. I enjoy watching Charlie crash and burn, and not in a mean way, just in a funny way.
You want to be around the circus folk, but you don't necessarily have to.
That's right. And I used to enjoy it. That's what's great about being your host of it. I don't have to go to the party. To me, it's really, hey, what happened at the party? Oh, my God, I can't believe that. You know, and you hear the story or whatever it might be. So
I felt that way about... Did you watch the movies when people were on the show?
I always watched the movies.
See, I never watched the movies.
Oh, I always watched
I had a completely different... What was your philosophy then? That you wanted to know the movie to be able to talk about it?
I think people like it. I know a lot of guests, if you made the effort to read their book or whatever it is they had, they would really be impressed. I mean, they would write you a note saying, I can't believe you went to my movie.
I never did that. I did the complete opposite.
That's funny.
No, but just because, well, you were clearly much more successful than I was at it.
No.
But what I felt about it was, if I know about it, then the two of us are talking about a movie we've both seen. If you're on plugging a movie and I haven't seen it and we're talking about it and you're telling me about the movie, I'm like, oh, this sounds like a movie that I want to see. And that was my philosophy. And Pete used to fight me on it a lot. He's like, nah, this is Tom Hanks. He's a big star. You got to go see his movie. I'm like, but if I've seen the movie, then I'm going to talk to him about the movie that we've both seen.
Yeah, but you talk about what you liked about it or what the character delineation or whatever it is they did.
Come on.
I enjoyed that part of it. I'd watch a movie. If I got to a part I thought was particularly challenging for the actor, I would remember that. And I bring it up in the interview and they, because everybody in show business is insecure.
Oh, sure.
And if they think, I remember once, publicity agents are my favorite. I wanted to see a guest, not say who the guest is, but one of those sort of obnoxious. I said, hey, man, pretty good job. Really enjoyed you in the movie. And the press agent came in, pretty good, pretty good. I go, what? It was great. You didn't say great. No, to me, I meant, really, that means, oh, I went like, whoa, pretty good, man, nice job. And then I said, nice job. And I said, I genuinely enjoyed it. Well, it didn't sound like it. Okay, guys yelling at me. I said, oh, shut up,
I bet you I can tell who this is. Like, off the microphone, I bet you I can tell you who this is. But the thing is, I think about it as well, like the show business, because you said everyone in show business is insecure. And I think you're right. And I think that a lot of the people in show business, they're crazy, damaged, unemployable in any other business industry.
That's true.
And they're all a little nuts. And the question that I got asked, I don't know if you got asked this, but like if there was somebody on who's like super famous, like Tom Hanks was on or so, people will always say, were they nice? Was he a nice guy?
Right.
Was she a nice woman? Are they nice? And I'm like, well, they were nice to me, but because they're doing a talk show and they're professional. But the truth is, why is that important to people? I don't know.
Well, I'll ask you a question.
Right.
Did your opinion of Woody Allen movies change after you heard all the things?
All the stuff about Woody Allen?
Yeah. I mean, did it change your opinion? Did you think?
Well, it's a good question, but it's a little tricky for me because I wasn't a huge fan anyway.
I wasn't a huge fan anyway, but I like someone. I like to think, like to me, it's funny when I hear someone tell an exaggerated version of a story where they did something mean but didn't mean to. But if I know they're really mean, that guy really did mean to hurt somebody.
Yeah, right.
So to me, I think it does matter. I always equate kindness with intelligence. I've never met a kind person who was not intelligent. And by intelligent, I don't mean mathematically smart. I mean, just the idea that a kind person can read another person's face and realize where to go with it, how to be sensitive, how to whatever. To me, that's intelligence. To me, I find really cruel people and mean people, they might be book smart, but they're not intelligent. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, yeah. It's a very nice way of looking at it. I think that that's true. But if I look at someone like, here's someone I don't know. I know nothing about them, but I'm a fan of his work. Ozzy Osbourne, right?
Right.
Ozzy Osbourne is like, you know, he's a game changer of a singer in a band. Hugely important. I don't need him to be nice. Did he bite the head off the bat or did he not bite the head off the bat? Yeah. I don't know. If I was, you know, like if I was heavily involved in the world of bats, maybe it would be...
Well, but let's go back. Did the Woody Allen stuff change your opinion of his work?
You know... Did it? You know what? It probably did, if I'm honest. I think you're right.
Biting a bat is different than, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. Marrying your daughter?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what did you do? Did you bite the head off a bat? Maybe?
Right.
Or did you actually definitely marry your stepdaughter?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I know. I hear what you're saying. These are extremes, all right? But what I think is kind of weird to me is that maybe not are they nice, but the idea that everyone's got to be like a Sunday school teacher. Like...
No, but I'll give an example to someone. It's a way to get here. I'm not a big road rage guy. Right. One day I'm here in LA, you know, a guy behind beep, 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 you know, like, oh, he wants to go. So I said, go around me, go around me. He goes around me, gives me the finger, yells, you know, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
So I come up to the next light. I look at him. I go, let me guess. What are you, 55? Bald, fat, divorced, your kids hate you, hate your job. What was your greatest day? Was it in high school? And the guy starts crying.
Oh, Jesus.
And he goes, yes, you're right. I went, oh, yeah, I realized. As a comic, you have the ability to size people up pretty quickly. And I'm hitting, everything I said was exactly. So I said, look, pull over. So I get on the mic, I get in this car, I go, look, I'm sorry. He goes, hey, I got kids, I got two girls, they don't speak to me.
Oh, my God, this is a terrible story.
So I said, do they like Taylor Swift? I said, look, I got Taylor Swift on the show on Wednesday, okay? Why don't you bring your two girls? Would they like to? Oh, God, would they like? I said, okay. And Taylor Swift, I told her, she couldn't have been nicer. Came out, gave the kids a couple of albums, signed. I mean, the sweetest person you could imagine.
I've heard that. Just a lovely person.
Yeah. She didn't have to do it. I said, I had this guy, and you know, I cut him off, and I was so mean to him. The guy literally had a breakdown.
Oh, my God.
He goes, you're right.
But you know what's interesting about that story, which I like that story. I like it for you. I like it for Taylor Swift. I like the fact that it happened. I wonder if that guy, if that happened today, that guy would have a phone in your face, record you slicing and dicing him, and then posting it on the internet.
Maybe, maybe not.
More than likely. You know, maybe not a guy, 55-year-old guy.
You know something, you can only live in the time you live in.
That's true.
It's like, could Muhammad Ali beat Rocky Marciano? You know,
is that all right? You want to take that?
No.
All right.
You know, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you're right. I want to complain about it a little bit, though, because I feel like the filming of everything is like we volunteered to be in Big Brother. It's not even like someone, we're all spying on each other.
That's the funny thing about Big Brother, because people always say, Big Brother is watching. You know, to me, probably the greatest day in media history was the Rodney King trial, the Rodney King thing. Here's Rodney King coming along. According to the police, he had seven people in a Hyundai going 117 miles an hour, to all exaggerated. Okay, that's what the news said. At 7 o'clock, I believe, that same evening, the guy who shot that footage, who chose not to give it to the news, who put it out on the internet.
Right.
And then suddenly people saw raw, unfiltered news. And you saw this guy get the crap beat out of him because it didn't look like he did anything that terrible. And then you realize, because what happens, you give it to a news guy and they'll go, the editor will go, well, this is inflammatory. People, this has caused, let's just say, it's like when I grew up in Boston, a woman was never raped, she was accosted.
Right.
You know, they never tell you what actually happened. Now you live in a world where you get your news unfiltered exactly as it happens.
Have you traveled a lot outside of the U.S.?
I've traveled outside the U.S.
Yeah. You do shows in,
well, I do England and if, no, I don't really work in, where have I been? Well, I've been to Italy, I've been to Saudi Arabia, a few places. Yeah, I don't find it totally different. Everybody speaks English.
Well, yeah, to you. But I mean, if you're doing a corporate gig in Italy, people will speak.
You know,
it's like I was talking to Tomas, right? You know Tomas who works with me.
Right.
So Tomas, who, you know, produces this podcast, he also, I love Italy, right?
Right. I love Italy. Right.
And Tomas says to me, "What, you love Italy?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "No, he, Tomas has managed heavy metal bands. He has to work in Italy."
Right.
He said, "If you had to work in Italy."
Oh, oh my God.
Very different idea about Italy.
Yeah.
It's like, because it is that kind of thing. It's when people say, you know, when they say, "Oh, I love Scotland so much. You Scottish people, you're so friendly." I went, "Yeah, try being Scottish with another Scottish person and see how fucking friendly they are.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's saying, so listen, let's talk a little bit about the cars.
All right. What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know how it started. Was it your dad? Was it the family?
I grew up in a rural area, and there were always broken snowmobiles and abandoned cars. Not so much now. Now when you abandon a car, it's got a
software doesn't work.
Yeah, it's got a computer. In the old days, people would abandon a car because the distributor broke. All right, that's an easy enough fix to somebody who has a little bit of mechanical knowledge or things of that nature. You know, a car from the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you could leave for 100 years and you probably get it started pretty easy.
Right.
Because mechanical things break, electrical things erode.
Right.
And you look at a relay box, it might be shiny, but you can't tell what's going on inside it, you know.
Right.
But you can look at a fuel pump and go, here's the gear is broken or the keyway is busted. You know, so they're easier to fix.
So that was what drew you in, was the mechanical nature of it, the fact that you could fix them when they
were anything that rolls, explodes, and makes noise. You know, when I was like 11, somebody abandoned a Renault 4CV, which is like the French version of the Volkswagen.
Right.
And we had 3 acres behind our house, and my mother would watch us through the kitchen window, and we'd just drive around and so. Of course, now the parents would be taken away, and you'd be put in foster care, and, you know, it would be, it's a whole different story.
Yeah, right? You just said it's bare now, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, in some ways it's
not. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
So you started playing around with it, but as you go older, right, mm-hmm. and you start like you...
Here's the main facts of it. We are in an objective business. Some people like you. Some people think you suck. Some people think you're better than me. Some people think I'm better than you. But when you have a car and it's broken and now it's running, no one can say it's not running. You know, you can say it's still not funny, even if other people are laughing and you're not.
Right.
But
right.
No one can say the car's not running. You know,
I think that's why all comedians, well, a lot of comedians are into cars because of that same reason.
Actually, most comedians are not into cars. Hold on a second.
Jerry's into cars.
Yeah.
I'm into cars a little bit.
I know a million guys. I remember, you know, Rich Jenny called me one time.
He
was the funny. He had the best gay marriage joke back in the days when it was illegal.
Yeah.
He would go, "Gay guys have the ideal life. Larry, I'd love to marry you, but it's against the law." Yeah. Imagine if you could say that to a girl. "Oh, I'd love to marry you, honey, but it's against the law." I used to love that. And you know, it wasn't offensive. It was because that was...
He was just talking. He wasn't homophobic.
Anyway, he calls one time. He goes, "Hey, what's the best car to get girls?" I go, "Well," I said, I only have one girl and I've had her for like 26 years at this point. So I couldn't tell you that, but what do you like?" "Well, I don't know. A Corvette's good. Can you get girls with Corvette?" "Some girls like Corvettes. Some girls think, how old are you? You have a Corvette." You know, I said, so he gets a Corvette, you know. And of course, he knows nothing about what it's capable of. He just got it together. What's the best car to get girls? It's just my favorite thing.
It's funny because I've never really understood that as a thing. I guess maybe back in the day when, you know, "Hey, baby, do you want to sit in the rumble seat or something?" But
a rumble seat. Back in the day.
What day was this?
1913?
Yeah, it was the 1920s in Scotland. Mm. So it's funny, Richard Jenny. Rich was one of the last gigs he had, actually, or one of the last things I remember doing. He was on my show.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't long after that that he killed himself.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was anything to do with my show, but I can't be sure.
Yeah.
I met him in Australia when I was starting out. I was at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Right.
And he turned up. He had these two very glamorous looking women,
right,
one on each arm.
Yeah.
And he walked into the gig. And I was like, how does a guy do that? Now I realize he must have had a Corvette.
Right.
That's what it was.
But really funny.
Super funny guy.
Oh, he had
very fast.
Quick, fast, very New York. You know, he had that New York attitude.
Yeah, no, he
really
was great.
Just a great, great comic. That was a sad, sad story.
It's an interesting thing. And Rich is a good kind of example of it, is that the persona that he had on stage was very different to who the guy he was. Rickles was very like this as well. People used to think Rickles was like, when he was on, he was the insult guy. But you remember Don. He was a pussy
guy. Oh, yeah, very nice guy. I love Don. Don was great. But even Don, you know, the network would censor him, and he would, I remember one time he came on and he, you know, Kevin Eubanks, he goes, there's Kevin. Kevin's people are in the parking lot stealing hubcaps. And I go,
they don't have hubcaps
anymore. You know what's interesting? I remember seeing Rickles once, and Rickles never swore.
That's right.
Okay, but when he did racial stuff, you know, and the Puerto Rican guy is this, and the black guy is this, and younger audience is kind of like, and older people laugh hysterically. And then he had a joke with a punchline with him saying, shit, you know, just like that. And the young people laughed, and the old people went, ooh. Yeah. So it was really two different audiences. Yeah.
It's funny. I never heard him say do the shit joke.
Well, it was one of those things where, you know, it leads up to it, and then he said, I can't remember what the bit was.
It's funny. When I first met him, Peter LaSalle introduced me to Rickles, and I said, will you come on the show, Mr. Rickles? And he went, I got to be honest, kid. I'm going to wait and see if you're a hit. Okay.
When he came on the show, I said,
I said to him, am I a hit now? He went, no, but I felt sorry.
Right.
For
him. No, it's funny.
He was a strangely lovely.
A lovely guy. And he grew up in the era when the mob guys really controlled it. Yeah. And to the day he died, he would never tell a story. Don, let me ask you about it. No. Like, I remember we went to Dantana's once, and I said, let's talk like the mob. He would just not even joke about it. He was like that as well as
Larry King. You remember Larry was he was connected in Miami at one point.
Yeah, that was the old school guys.
Do you ever run into that in Boston when you were a kid?
I'll tell you a story. One day I get a call from Sinatra, had an agent named Jack Gilardi. He goes, Jack, Sinatra wants you to play this Italian thing, some benefit at a country club in Chicago. It's Italian-American thing, and you got to work clean. You understand? You got to work clean. There's going to be a priest there. You know, I said, yeah, okay, I'll work clean. Okay. So I get there. I get up and I do my little thing. I get some laughs. Oh, thank you very much. And I sit down. So they introduced this guy. I'm not going to say his name because his kids are still alive. A real gangster.
Right.
Okay. And he gets up there. How you doing, everybody? Hey, what the fuck's going on? You know, like that. And the priest goes like this. And the priest goes, what? Hey, father. Shut the fuck up! He's just screaming.
Oh my God.
And the veins are popping in his head. When you see a psychopath just lose it, he goes, you got your 10 grand in a paper bag, right, father? Shut the fuck up! Just scream. And the priest is holding his bag with the 10 grand in it like this, you know? And he's just, and guys are holding him like this. Motherfucker, he's just.
He's going after the priest.
He's just screaming at the guy, you know? And he's sitting like this, you know? So I'm like, oh, Jesus. And the crowd is like, oh my God, because this guy.
That's a way to lose a crowd. If you go psycho on, it doesn't even have to be the priest, just anybody.
As I remember the story, they told the heartwarming story. Some teenagers had broken into his house.
Yeah.
And stolen something. Okay. They found them 2 weeks later, and they had been skinned alive. Somebody hung them by their wrists, stripped them, and run a straight razor from their arms down to their toes and just peeled off a layer of skin until these guys slowly blended it. And it was like, oh, okay. So that was like, oh, scary, you know. So I'm sitting there and I just watching this whole thing play out. And they take him away, right? So the lady says, Jay, come here. He goes, you play golf? I know. Well, come on. So he and I in the golf cart, he goes, you know, we asked Stallone to come to this. You know what he said? He said, no. And I said, well, you know, he's very busy. He said, it wasn't busy! he fucking explodes again, you know?
Oh my
and
God.
It's like, I'm sitting there.
I would never play golf with a guy who had skinned people. Yeah, alive,
exactly. I'm not doing it again.
Do you play golf?
No, I don't
get think
it.
You were
no,
a golf guy.
If you could play it in 20 minutes, maybe.
Well, and also, if the carts are shit. I mean, if it was maybe if you got maybe if you had a Corvette.
Corvette. But the point of this was, just most people think, you know, my favorite thing, and The French Connection was the best movie to do. Whenever you watch TV, when a guy, Bob, put the gun down. I know you don't want to shoot me. Okay. And the guy always puts the gun down, and Cannon or Magnum or whoever it is takes the gun away from him.
Okay. Remember
the
Cannon? That's pretty good. Remember
the French Connection where the transit cop, the French guy who's running from Popeye Doyle,
yeah.
He's on the train, he's got a gun, and the guy goes, look, I know you don't want to shoot me, you don't want to call me. He just shoots him at 4 or 5, just blows the guy away. Go, okay, thank you. That's what really happens in real life. All these people think they're going to be a hero because they know he's really a good guy. No, there are evil people in the world. There are bad guys out there, you know?
But I'm still happy about you bringing up Cannon.
Cannon. Oh, yeah.
I loved Cannon. You know, like, he was like a 300-pound detective. He was right. 5'8", 300
right, right,
pounds.
Right, right.
And he would run after teenagers
them? No, what it was, he would park in the alley in his big Lincoln, and the crook would run towards him, and he'd open the driver's door, bang, and that would hit them, and knock them out. Yeah, yeah.
Man, I think it's maybe time for a Cannon reboot.
I love
you know, if Billy hadn't lost all that weight, he'd have been perfect. Yeah, but he's all thin and gorgeous now. That's the problem.
He does look great. He does look great, 178 pounds. He lost.
Is that how much he
lost? It's unbelievable. He lost a whole person.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he looks great. And you know something? I was telling this the other night. A lot of guys that used to be fat aren't really funny anymore because their whole persona was based on
being fat.
But you know something? You look at him now, you're thinking, well, he's always been a skinny guy, right? Because it doesn't reflect in anything that he does. I mean,
he was a graceful man. I mean, we talked ages ago because he was a big fan of Laurel and Hardy. Right. I was a big fan of Laurel and Hardy.
I love Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, my God. And one of the things about Babe Hardy was his grace.
Yeah.
You know, the lightness of his feet, the kind of the, it was funny.
You know, Louis Anderson, the same thing.
Louis
had great dignity about it. He'd move his hands very slowly and fold them in his lap. And he never saw him sweating on stage.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But he always had those bits about his mom didn't like cats because they licked the butter and all that kind of stuff, you know.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You know, the guys you're talking about, we're talking about, you know, the, like Louis was one, Gilbert was another one, Gilbert Gottfried was another one.
Right.
Like real kind of idiosyncratic characters. That I don't look, I don't pay a lot of attention to the young comics right now. I don't know if you do. I don't see a ton of that. I see a lot of the same. Like, you know, you know a lot of not as much eccentricity of performance, maybe. There's some really good ones. I mean, I watched Michelle Wolf on Netflix. You see her?
You see her new special?
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
something? I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, me too.
I thought she was really great. Because I thought, you know, when she done all the White House stuff, it's like...
Oh, that's a terrible gig. You've done it. I've done it. It's a tough gig.
Well, but I mean, it's all politics. It's like, it's how stinging can it be? And to watch her latest one... Oh, these are real jokes.
She's really funny.
Yeah. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And the one that's done in three parts or four parts.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Each one is a 20-minute segment. Yeah. And I watched it and I thought, boy, she's really, really good. And it's a shame that she got beat up so badly over...
Well, you know, it happens with the White House. Like, Colbert got beat up pretty badly for what he did at the White House as well. But ultimately, it worked out for him. And I think that it's one of those weird gigs, the White House dinner. I remember when I did it, I talked to you before I did it. You remember that?
Yeah.
Because you were just, I remember you said to me, it's just not about you. Just remember it's not
about
you.
Right, right.
And I talked to you and I talked to Drew Carey because Drew had done it as well. But I thought it was a hard gig. It was like a really tough corporate.
Well, it's an impossible gig. Yeah, because everybody's, you know, looking in the mirror, you know.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, no, it's really not.
And when you have somebody like Obama, who is a really good comic.
Good stand-up, yeah.
He goes on first. Yeah. Well, now you follow him.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't do it with him. I did it with George Bush.
I did it with Reagan. I'll tell you what I did. First time I did it was with Reagan. So I'm backstage, and this general comes in. He goes, hey, you the comic? Yes, sir, I'm Jay Leno. He goes, I'm so the words. This is my commander-in-chief. You understand that? This is my boss. He is the leader of the free will. You don't insult him. You don't tell him. And he's poking me in the chest, you know?
Wow.
And I said, well, okay. Yes, sir. You understand? Yeah. And then he leaves. Okay. I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm starting to change jokes, you know? And then all of a sudden, George Shultz comes in. Remember him?
Yeah.
And he's really drunk. He goes, Leno, come here. When you get up there, you nail Ronnie's ass to the wall. You understand me? I go, but that guy tell me, screw it, he works for me. I'm the defense guy. You make fun of that thing on Reagan's head. You think that's his hair color? You think that's his real hair color? And I go, I don't know. No, you're good. So I said, what do I do? I remember my opening joke was, I want to congratulate Nancy Reagan. I'm winning the Humanitarian of the Year Award. I'm glad she beat out that conniving little bitch, Mother Teresa.
That's a funny joke.
Oh, and Reagan fell off the chair. He was, I said, well, then I knew I was in. I knew it was okay. But it's an impossible gig.
It's really hard. Is there any, because I've got a couple of jokes. One of them was at the White House Correspondent Dinner that I never told, that I was going to do the joke right to the last minute, and then I did. And I have two in my life that I've never done. I'll tell you them in a minute. But do you have... any that you thought I was going to do this joke?
You know what's so funny? The only jokes I remember are the ones that made an impression. Because as a comic, you have things that put a notch in your brain. You just remember, like that first joke I told about, you know, the Robin Hood thing and all that. I remember, so you remember everything. I remember being 5 years old and my mother taking me to, because we didn't have babysitters then, so she just took me everywhere. So we went to my Aunt Edith's house on the Italian side. And it's all women drinking wine, and I'm sitting on the floor. And I was looking at the women. I said, hey, Mom, why do women have humps like camels? Woo! Listen to that one, Kathy! Oh, my God! And they're all drunk anyway. And they're all screaming. And I'm thinking, what did I say? I said something about humps. And I always remember that because it got it. So as a comic, I think when you say something and it gets a laugh, you just
for the most part, pretty much remember it because...
But I'm talking about the ones that you made a decision not to tell the joke for another
reason. Yeah, I can't remember the joke, so I can't remember what it was.
I have two. I'm going to tell you them. Okay. One was a White House Correspondents' Dinner, where there was a lot of trouble. It was the very last, Bush and Cheney and all those guys were up there, and Rumsfeld was around, all that stuff. And I was going to say at the start of it, it's great to be up here. We won't see all these guys together in one room again until the trial. And I thought that was a pretty good joke. And they said to me, probably a good idea. It wasn't the White House. It was one of my own guys said, probably a good idea if you don't do that joke. People are still a little, you know, uncomfortable. That was a pretty decent joke. And the other one, I'm kind of still thinking that maybe I should have done it and maybe I shouldn't. And here's what it was. I had a book come out, my autobiography come out, right? And it was the same week as Ted Kennedy, his biography came out. He had just died that week.
Right.
And Mackenzie Phillips' book came out where she talks about having sex with her dad.
Oh, right, right.
And there were all three of us vying for the number one spot in the New York Times bestseller list. And I knew I wasn't going to get it.
Right.
Because Ted Kennedy had died and Mackenzie Phillips talks about having sex with her dad.
Right, right.
So I was doing this event in Union Square at the Barnes & Noble, and I wanted to do this joke, and my publicist says, that's a great joke, and I beg you, don't do it. I went, okay. But the joke, I was going to come on stage and say, in my book, Mackenzie Phillips fucks Ted Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't do it, and I kind of wish I had done it, but I'm kind of glad I didn't.
No, that's a funny joke.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, but, you know... Tempers were flaring at the time, and it was probably
yeah.
A good
I always
idea
do that because you know, all the things you want to say. I'm not going to say who it was, but I had someone on who was very sensitive, and they'd just gotten glasses, and they had a big nose. And I said, and I wanted to say, "Oh, did the nose come with the glasses?" But I knew they'd be just
yeah, they'd be hurt. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you can, you know, you don't want to hurt someone's feelings. We're not in that game. You don't want to anybody feel bad.
That was the thing about being a talk show. You got to know when, I was a comedian when I did the monologue and I was a host when I did that. Because a lot of times,
I totally agree.
You win the battle and you lose the war, you know?
Totally. I always felt as well, and this is why I love doing your show, is because I felt like I was, you took the word host, like literally, like, I'm here to host. I want you to feel good. I want you to have a good time. I want you to enjoy yourself. And that's how I took that from, you know, when I was on your show. And I was like, no, that's how I want to be. Because I had done other shows where I felt, I've got to wash my ass here.
Right.
You know, I'll put one foot wrong and I'm going to be made a fool of. And I never felt that when I was working with you. And I hope that anyone who was on my old show felt the same way.
Right,
it was
right.
Like, you know, I'm not here. And funny enough, I was talking to Kristen Bell the other day, who was like my number one all time, you know, she was like on the show every other week.
She was great.
She was, you know, everyone has a guest.
I'm sure
you had him. And I'm going to ask you who it was in a minute. But I was talking to her and she said, well, it was weird for me because I always thought she was a great improviser. And she said, no, I hate that. I always like knowing what I'm going to do. I was like, that's weird. I always thought you loved improvising and that's why you always did my show. And she went, no, I just trusted you.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's great. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And so tell me who were your go-tos?
You know, Terry Bradshaw was pretty good.
Yeah, he's very funny, yeah.
You know,
he had a talk show.
Yes, that's right.
He had a daytime talk show or something.
But, you know, Terry was the best one ever, and you could not have planned this. He comes out and he goes, Jayla, I heard that monologue. That monologue sucked. That was the worst jokes I've ever. He's just trashing on me.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I could shut you down with four words. No, you can't. I can't. What? I said, your fly is open. And he goes, and his pants were wide open.
Oh my God.
And he looked down and he fell off the chair. He's laughing so hard. He just felt so stupid. He was a great one. I had him 30, maybe 54 times.
Yeah.
And the comics are always good. You were good. Jerry was good. Robin Williams, of course, was good.
Yeah, Robin kind of took over. I used to like that. You just hand him the reins.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You just let him go. You couldn't really interact with him. But you know what my favorite, too, was with Rodney? Because when I would watch Rodney with Johnny, Johnny would be the straight man. Tough week, Rodney? Oh, Rodney, Johnny, I tell you, this week is all right, but last week, it was cold. Really? It was cold outside? Oh, Johnny was so cold.
I would get
Rodney out, oh, that was my favorite thing to the, been a tough week? Oh, Jay, I tell you, it's all right now, but last week, I got to tell you, you know. Did I tell you my Rodney story about?
No.
I'll tell you a Rodney story. I've told this story, but
not to me.
I had Rodney on the show.
Okay. Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield, 2004. Yeah. And Rodney was a little older.
Yeah.
A little more frail. And mm-hmm. he comes up and he's doing the show. He's doing his stand-up. I notice he's sweating more than, you know, as someone who watches comics and you know them personally, you can tell when they're a little off, you know. I could tell when Jerry's killing, but it's not his normal super hard kill. It's just and Rodney, he would always touch his tie. This time his hands were kind of, he's just a little off.
There are tells.
You know,
sure.
So I'm watching this. So I said to Debbie, our producer, Debbie Vickers, I said, Deb, I said, I think Rodney's having a stroke. Call the cops. Call the paramedics.
No.
She goes, you think? I said, I think he is, yeah. Okay, so he sits now, Jay. I will tell you, I'm all right now, Jay, but last week. You know, and he's got the handkerchief, and he's really sweating. But he gets through it, and he does fine. Okay. Now the show ends. Just as the show ends, Rodney goes to his dressing room, and the paramedics come in. And I say, so I go in and I say, Rodney, I said, paramedics, I think he might have a stroke. I didn't have a stroke. Well, he did have a stroke.
You saw that?
Well, he was just off. He was just off. So they took him away in an ambulance. He went to the hospital. And he didn't live much longer than that. And then his wife, Joan, calls me and says, you got to come to the hospital. Rodney's in a coma. Okay. I get there and Rodney's lying there. His eyes are open. And she says, Jay, the doctor says Rodney can hear us, but he can't respond to us. You know. So I'm telling him how much we love him and how great he was to all his comics, you know, letting us work Rodney's club and, yeah, Rodney Dangerfield's and all, blah, 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 blah. So his wife, Joan, says, Rodney. She goes, Jay, put your finger in Rodney's hand. She goes, Rodney, if you know it's Jay, try and squeeze his finger. So I put my finger in Rodney's hand like this. And I went, Rodney, that's not my finger, okay? and Rodney's shoulders go like this. They just move. And Joan goes, he moved! And then the doctor comes in, and he died right after that. But
you got to laugh.
Yeah, we got to laugh out of Rodney.
Yeah,
you know, and it was kind of, I mean, I don't say it to be mean or even to be funny, just as a life well led, you know, and he was a wonderful guy, and he was a smart guy.
I never got to meet him.
You know, you never met Rodney?
No, I never met him.
Well, you know, the whole thing about being an aluminum siding salesman, you know, if comedy doesn't make him, well, that, he did. He was an aluminum siding salesman. But he was a great aluminum siding salesman.
I bet he was.
He was so successful, he quit show business to sell aluminum siding. Then at age 44, his face finally grew into his act. He began to look like the sad sack that he was. And that's when he really became famous. Because, see, I remember Rodney before he had no respect, when he used to do bits.
Right.
And he would do bits. I remember one bit he had. I can't recreate it, but this is the essence of it. He goes, welcome to flight 265 at TW Airlines. He'd be the pilot, you know. He goes, we're flying over right now over to Indiana, rather desolate part. If you look down on the left side of the plane, you can see the remains of flight 418 that crashed right there in the ground. Bob, you were with me on that one, weren't you? You know? Yeah. It was just like just hilarious. Just like a funny, almost like a very Bob Newhart.
Yeah, it sounds Ben Newhart. Yeah,
and then later he got into doing bits. Did you ever see a movie called The Projectionist? It was done, I think, in 69.
No.
Rodney was in that play. He was good. He was good. And Back to School, one of the funniest, to me, that thing about, in the union, remember the guy goes, I'm going to build an imaginary factory. Oh, yeah, how are you going to pay off this guy and pay off that guy? You know, and just so funny. Yeah, he was really the funniest guy. And I knew Rodney 40 years. I have no idea if he's a Democrat. I have no idea if he's a Republican. All we ever talked about were jokes.
That is true with a lot of older comics.
He had quick jokes. One of my favorite Rodney jokes is, I walked past a strip joint. I said, topless and bottomless. I went in. There was nobody there. Yeah. I mean, it's a great topless,
it's a
bottomless.
Stupid joke. Yeah.
There was nobody there.
Yeah, that's a great joke.
Then the other joke he had, I was like, my doctor said, I need a semen sample, I need a stool sample, I need a urine sample. So I gave him my underpants. You know, just those stupid kind of jokes.
Yeah.
And just hilarious. Just hilarious.
Were you ever intimidated by anyone? That you ever have a guest and you actually get nervous? I had a couple, but you ever have any where you think?
Oh, one day I had Roger Moore on. So I'll tell you about Sean Connery forever. Roger Moore. And he would tell you, I said, where are you going on vacation? We go to India. We go to India quite often. Go to India. Yeah, that's quite a trip. Oh, not really. Well, how often do you go? Oh, well, I'm going every weekend. Every weekend to India.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, that's, it's not a long flight. No, 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 we drive, really drive. You drive to India from England? No, no, from California. He was trying to say Indio. Indio. You know, and I went, oh, it's just like a whole wasted segment.
Going. Yeah. You're trying to talk about India.
Sean Connery is my favorite because Sean Connery was the only guy I ever heard my mother referred to in a sexual way. That's a real man, Jamie.
Oh, Sean yeah. Connery. No, the women were different. I introduced my wife to Sean Connery. And her breasts lit up. And I didn't even know breasts could do
that's
that.
That's right.
Yeah, but Sean Connery probably went through life thinking that women's breasts lit up all the time.
That's right.
That's the only time I've seen it happen. I introduced her to, and she went, oh, hello, Sean, nice to meet you. She's like, very nice to meet you, Megan. Boom.
Hello,
boom, like,
hello, pushy.
Well, he didn't talk to her bottom department. He only, I mean, her, but it was really, ba-ba!
I know. Well, most people don't know, he was Mr. Universe third runner-up.
Yeah, that's
1953.
Right.
He was a longshoreman, and he was a tough son of a
bitch. Very tough. You know the story about him and Johnny Stompanato?
Oh, no, did he get in a fight with Johnny Stompanato?
Johnny Stompanato brings a gun on at the set. I can't remember the movie. He was doing a movie with Lana Turner. And the rumor was that Big Tam, as he's known in Scotland, or Sean Connery, was having an affair with Lana Turner, which knowing him and knowing about her, I'd say it's probably a good even money bet. But Stompanato, who's her gangster boyfriend, turns up, points a handgun at Sean Connery.
Right.
He takes the gun. He smacks Stompanato on the side of the head with the gun and says, get the fuck out of here. Don't bring a gun onto a place of war.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like, he was a tough guy. He was from a very tough part of Edinburgh, and he was very kind of...
And he's the only guy, you always say, you always hear a joke's a knee slapper.
Yeah.
He's the only guy I ever saw slap
his knee.
He'd go, gee, what's the latest filthy joke going about, gee? You know, and I'd tell him, he'd go, I mean, he would laugh like he was a pirate. And he was the only guy that ever took a shower in a Tonight Show dressing room. Because the dressing room is small in this
room. I remember.
Just
a little
tiny. Yeah. They had a shower, but no, nobody. Yeah. And he would sing, hello, take the high road. And the news guys, news had to run down with the headphones. Who's shouting down? I said, Sean Connery singing.
I'll
take the high road. I'll be in Scotland before. Yeah, but. You know, they took this rough thug. Put him in a Savile Row suit.
Yeah.
They taught him a little bit about wine. So he came across, he was the only really dangerous Bond. I never got, Roger Moore was always the Pillsbury Doughboy.
He was kind of like the comedy Bond.
But him and Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I could believe Daniel Craig.
But Sean dangerous. Connery had the height, he had the weight. He had the threat.
Pierce was pretty good for the 1980s.
Yeah, Pierce was good too.
But
Sean Connery just had the physical presence. I mean, the Bond films are funny because Goldfinger, the man with a big fat guy can barely speak English. Slobbering over himself. How is this guy in the song?
A threat to Sean Connery.
In the song, women. Oh, he's Goldfinger. You know. Oh, please.
You know that. Sean Connery, I think it's in the movie Goldfinger. He wears a little toweling mini, like it's like little shorty shorts.
Oh, yeah.
And a zip that goes up the front and a little thing like that. It's the most ridiculous looking outfit.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember we were watching it, like when one of my boys was little, introducing them to an old Bond movie. I said to Megan, that's a stupid looking outfit. And she went, not on Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah.
And then her breast lit up again.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And he wasn't even there.
Yeah, he was. He was quite a guy.
He was a very impressive.
I mean, he was a guy for his time.
Because
you watch it now, and it's so incredibly sexist.
It's shocking. But it was what it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, buddy, we're done for the recording.
What?
You and I can talk anytime.
We've done all right.
Yeah, we're done.
That went pretty quick.
Yeah, well, you know, we do talk a lot.
Yeah.
A lot more than I talk to any other former host of the Tonight Show.
Oh, there you go.
You're the one I talked to.
Well, there you go.
And I think that, you know, I had such a good time when we were doing gigs with Arsenio this summer, and we should do it again.
Yeah, I love doing those. He's
a great guy, too. Arsenio's
a great guy. I tell you a story about Arsenio. It was so funny. I think I told you about with Barry Manilow. You know what I'm saying?
No, tell me.
Well, he was the only real threat. That was the one Carson was afraid of.
Arsenio?
Well, because it was hip.
Yeah, he was good.
Black, it was young, it was everything Johnny wasn't, you know.
Right.
And, you know, like when Dana Carvey did Carsenio, he did a comedy impression of a brilliant impression. Johnny just hated, made him very nervous. Anyway, so the first night of Arsenio's show, he goes, you're not going to see Barry Manilow's ass on this show. This show is all about the funk. It's about the music. Hit it, you know, the band plays it for you.
Right.
Okay, so I remember watching that show, right? Now, this is the time when he and I were supposedly fighting, right? So
you and Arsenio?
Well, I'm going to kick Leno's ass. He had all this stuff going on, you know.
It's funny because I think of you two as being very good friends.
We were very good friends.
Yeah, we still are,
and we were even during that. So anyway, so I'm watching him every night to make sure we don't do the same jokes because you need to do that, you know. And I hear him say about December. Now, he came on, I guess, in September. And about December, he goes, and next week on the show, Barry Manilow. You know, I have to say. So the next day I call. I go, hi, can I speak to Arsenio Hall? This is Jay Leno. Just a minute. He doesn't want to speak to you. Now, just put on. He doesn't want to speak to you. I said, no, he needs to hear what I have to say, you know. He goes, what do you want, motherfucker? What do you want? Ooh, next week. Barry Manilow. And then he falls off the chair. He's laughing so hard. I go, oh, you won't see his ass on my... Because you realize when you do these shows, you need everybody.
You can't be every night.
You got to have someone. But, and from that point on, we both laughed at that.
When the news broke that I was going to do the late night show, when I was taking it over, I was at a U2 concert in Forum in Los Angeles, and you know the little backstage area.
Yeah.
And, so I'm backstage there, and Chris Rock is there. And he comes over and he goes, you're the guy taking over the show? And I went, yeah. And he goes, you guys do that shit every fucking night? And I went, yeah. And he went, no, man, every fucking night? I went, yeah. And then it kind of haunted me. It was like a movie.
But see, I found every night easier because if it didn't go well, I got some. I can't stop and dwell. I got to move on.
Yeah, that is the glory of it. But the truth is, by the time I was done, I mean, what did you do? 25 years?
22 years.
23?
Well, I mean, 25 is kind of guessing, yeah.
Yeah, I did 10 years, and that's about two more than I really
wanted
to do. Wasn't there a point where you were like, ugh?
No, I'm pretty good at simple, repetitive tasks, so.
Yeah, well.
I enjoyed it. I liked the discipline of writing jokes every day.
You were great at it.
Oh, pencils down. I got to go. Okay. If the show wasn't any good, I got another show tomorrow. And 3 days later, you forgot about that show that wasn't very good.
That's true. It's interesting now, though, that all these shows hang around and people pick out parts from a show and broadcast it. Like, I don't even remember doing that.
I know.
It's crazy. You know,
Different. You know, the saddest thing about late night is everybody doing it is really good. The trouble is you have these streaming services. You can watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy without commercials. You can watch all three Godfather movies. You know, every talk show you watch now, because the viewing audience is smaller, there's even more commercials.
Yeah.
So you watch the monologue, 5.5 minutes, then 7 minutes of commercials, then 6.5 minutes of show, then 9 minutes after midnight of commercials.
Oh my God.
It just makes it, you know, and it's not the host's fault. It's just, there's so much.
The economics of it.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I got out when I did. We got out at the right time, buddy.
Oh, we did, yeah. Nobody's making that kind of money anymore.
All right, well, let's get the fuck out here.
Let's go. All right, mate.
Drive a car somewhere. Yeah, anytime.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth, no matter who you are, that mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.